Welcome to the Voice of Truth on 103.3 WAJR-FM, the radio broadcast ministry of Christian Apostolic Church in Clarksburg, West Virginia. And now, your host, author, teacher, and pastor, Doug Joseph.
Welcome to the broadcast. We are so thrilled to have as our guest, all the way from Israel, Rabbi Pesach Walicki. And so I'm reading your latest book, Cup of Salvation, which is wonderful.
Thank you.
I know just from our talks, from our friendship, the folks may not know I have four children. I don't talk about it a whole lot, I guess, every now and then. But you have eight children.
Eight children, yeah.
And whereas here in America, my four, I actually have people rudely say to me, what are you trying to do, start a daycare? You know, because they act like four is such a huge number. Yeah. In fact, people of faith that should know better actually have made kind of comments like that. But where you live in Israel, having eight children is nothing unusual at all.
I have... It's still a lot of kids. Not everyone is blessed to, you know, thank God we've been really blessed with the ability to have a lot of children. But there's other families in our neighborhood who have as many or more children as us, you know, so it's, no one thinks it's strange. It's just like, wow, that's a lot, you know. but it's very normal in our neighborhood to have five or six. That's kind of...
You know, it's been really, I guess, less than a generation ago since large families in America were not all that uncommon. And, you know, on my mother's side, I have one uncle that he's passed on now, but he had nine children. I had another uncle who's also passed on. He had eight children.
Yeah, no one thought that was strange.
And no one thought a thing about it. And now if you have more than 1.2 kids and 0.9 of a dog or whatever, they look at you like you're bonkers. And so you were mentioning some things, and it was calling to my mind. I guess it's been something like, maybe 4 years since we met?
Less than that. If it feels like a long time, it's because our friendship is, the more we get to know each other, the longer it seems. We met 2.5 years ago.
2.5 years ago,
yeah,
okay.
It was the fall of 2015.
Wow.
If I'm not mistaken.
And so the very night we met, we really had a friendship that sparked just immediately, just from talking about things in the scripture.
Yeah.
But we both, for the first time that night, met a Christian pastor.
Yeah, Pastor Naeem Khoury.
From Bethlehem.
Yeah.
And you have told me some things that just blow my mind. And so just maybe tell our listening audience about some of those things.
So that night, I've been working for the center that I work for only a few months. And I guess I should tell our listeners what I do. I'm an Orthodox rabbi. I live in Israel, and I work for an organization, the Center for Jewish-Christian Understanding and Cooperation. And most of our work is just bridge building and building friendships with Christians. So I travel to the States, as I am now, here in West Virginia, speaking in churches, speaking in Christian seminaries. And a lot of our work in Israel is with Christian groups that come to visit Israel. You know, a lot of Christian tourists, they walk where Jesus walked and they go see all the Christian sites and they see the land of Israel, but they don't really engage the people of Israel on their trips. And the mission of our organization is really to, you know, to deepen that relationship. Even Christian supporters of Israel who are very active with political support or even giving charity towards Israeli causes, that doesn't necessarily translate into a flesh and blood look at you in the eye, relationship, a friendship with the Jewish people. So our mission is really to build more those bridges and also to educate the Jewish community. The Jewish community has a lot of curiosity, sometimes suspicion. You know, they're grateful for the support and the friendship of Christians, but they're also not sure what to make of it. You know, so we do a lot of work in that bridge building. The Prime Minister of Israel has unofficially, I mean, he wrote a letter. It wasn't an official appointment, but he referred to our organization as Israel's ambassador to the Christian world, which is kind of what we do. So you know, getting back to this story, that night 2.5 years ago, I had been on the job a few months, and I spoke to many Christian groups that had come through. And in a kind of routine way, I was told to go to a certain restaurant where there was a private party room. There was a group of Christian leaders from the United States, and I was to speak to them. And I was one of a number of speakers that night, and one of the other speakers was Pastor Naeem Khoury. Now, Naeem Khoury, he's a man, not sure how old he is, probably late 60s, early 70s. He is the founding pastor of a church that I didn't know existed until then. I mean, our organization, the other people in it who had been there longer than me were aware of this church, but it was new to me. But his church is a church of Arabs, Arab Christians in Bethlehem and East Jerusalem and the surrounding areas who are evangelical Christians. And a lot of people don't know they exist. You know, people from a distance have this very binary, simplistic view of Israel's relationship to the Arab population. They tend to just think there's the Israelis, there's the Palestinians. They assume that this is kind of assumption that the Arab population is all Muslim, even though people know that there's Arab Christians. Okay, those Arab Christians must just be, you know, like Catholics or Eastern Orthodox. And people don't know how multifaceted the situation really is. So there's this population, there's this community really centered in Bethlehem, but as I said, in the other areas as well, of evangelical Christians. It's been there for a few generations. The church has grown. Pastor Khoury started the church decades ago, and it's been successful. So they have a church in East Jerusalem. They have a church in Bethlehem. And that night, he spoke about how difficult life is for his particular community. And not because they're Palestinian Arabs and the Israelis make their life difficult. Not at all. Their life is made difficult because they live under the authority of the Palestinian Authority. The Palestinian Authority, as we know, led by Mahmoud Abbas, used to be Yasser Arafat, is really a dictatorial, mafia-like government of a bunch of old terrorists from the PLO who rule those areas that were given to them in the so-called peace process with an iron fist, and they're Muslims. And they have made active efforts to make life difficult for Christians in Bethlehem. First, let me talk a bit about generally Christianity in Bethlehem, and then we'll get back to Pastor Khoury's church. Bethlehem, for obvious reasons, for centuries, was an overwhelmingly majority Christian city. I don't have to explain why Bethlehem was a Christian city. If you go back only two decades, about 80%, 75 to 80% of Bethlehem is Christian. Bethlehem's a Christian city. In that short two decades, the situation has flipped. Less than 20% of the population of Bethlehem today is Christian, 80% Muslim, in 20 years.
And it's dwindling still.
That's a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
That's a transformation like that only happens if it's deliberate.
Yeah.
The Palestinian Authority has an agenda to push Christians out of Bethlehem. It's even gotten so far as over the last few years, it's been a fight to even allow decorations to be put up for Christmas in Bethlehem.
Wow.
Like I was saying, and I wasn't kidding, there are probably more Christmas decorations here in Clarksburg this year than there were in the city of Bethlehem. Now, I'm not Christian, but that speaks to something larger going on. Now, there are different kinds of Christians there, and some of the Christians, a lot of the Christian Arabs, also have unfavorable attitudes towards Israel. A lot of them just kind of keep it to themselves. But Pastor Khoury's church, they're bold, they're evangelical Christians, and part of their theology, like a lot of evangelical Christians here in America, they're spirit-filled evangelicals, and they are favorable to the people of Israel, to God's chosen people. And they preach from the Old Testament, which is a no-no. You know, a lot of Christians don't realize the Eastern Orthodox Church, which is one of the dominant forms of Christianity in the Middle East, if you get a Bible that they read from, it doesn't even include the Hebrew Bible. It doesn't include what you call the Old Testament.
Wow.
They view that as just a Jewish book that has nothing to do with them anymore. And they say, in with the new, out with the old. They mean it.
Wow.
So and that was part of Pastor Khoury's story that night, that when he was a child and he came to his faith, he went looking for a Bible that included the Old Testament. He couldn't find one. It was an interesting detail of the stories. Anyway, so that night, I'm listening to him tell his story, and he's talking about his church. Let's get the numbers. This is what he said that night. Over 65% of the members of his church are unemployed. Unemployed because sometimes it's unofficial pressure that the leading authorities will actually pressure employers to fire people or not hire people who are from his church. See, they want them to leave. They want life to be difficult enough for them that they pack up and go. Now, why is that? Bethlehem is a cash cow. There's not a lot of burgeoning economy in the Palestinian Authority. But Bethlehem is an ATM machine. It is the number one tourist attraction for the millions of Christians who visit Israel every year. So it has hotels, it has restaurants, it has all the attractions. And the Muslims who are in charge, they want to be reaping the benefits of that. So they've been pushing the Christians out of Bethlehem. They keep enough of them there. You know, they want enough of them there so that there's still a bit of a Christian presence. And still today, the mayor of Bethlehem is Christian, but that's just a puppet.
Figurehead position.
The Palestinian Authority makes sure that the mayor of Bethlehem is always Christian so they can turn around and say, look, the mayor's Christian. It's still a Christian city, but it's not a Christian city anymore. They make life very difficult for Christians, specifically for the members of this church. This church, specifically, here's some of the ways that they persecute them. They don't allow them to register their marriages. They don't allow them to register births of their children. If someone needs a permit to go study, you know, a lot of Palestinian Arabs study in the Israeli university system and Hebrew university, etc. They need a permit to cross over. Well, people from this church will have a difficult time. Maybe the paperwork will just sit on the desk for a while, and they'll never get an answer. It's that kind of persecution. So it's not the persecution of beheadings and bombing churches, but their church life is very difficult. But they also have those types of persecutions. Their church in Bethlehem has been bombed 14 times. Pastor Khoury that night talked about being shot at 4 times. They thought he was dead because he was shot in the chest, but the bullet missed his heart. His brother, he brought his whole family to Christian faith, and then one of his brothers was attacked at night on the Mount of Olives and hacked to death with axes for being Christian. Christians in America do not understand what it is to suffer for your faith. They don't even know what it is to suffer to go to church. It's a little windy outside and suddenly church attendance is down to, dwindles. These are people who are showing up in church and there's buckets of water in the church in Bethlehem ready for the next firebomb attack because it's a regular occurrence in the church. Pastor Khoury's son, Stephen, who's also one of the pastors, has been attacked at night with chains, beaten for being Christian, for being a pastor, for bringing people to Christianity. These are heroes. So I'm sitting there that night with you, Doug, in that restaurant, and I had my speech about Jewish-Christian relations and about and what we do, and I'm listening to Pastor Khoury, and I'm like, oh my gosh. And all that's going on in my mind is, wait a second. 3,300 something years ago, when Moses and the people of Israel were on the banks of the Jordan River, and Moses was giving his final speeches to the people of Israel before he passed away, preparing them to enter the land, otherwise known as the Book of Deuteronomy. The Book of Deuteronomy is a series of speeches Moses gives in the last 5 weeks of his life. And over again in that book, he reminds them that when you go into the land, besides the enemies who you have to deal with, there will be others among you, people of other nations who will want to live peacefully. In Hebrew, the word is ger, the others, and you must love them, and you must care for them, and remember that you were a stranger in Egypt and what it's like to be not part of the majority, and don't treat them like the Egyptians treated you. You must love them and care for them. And I'm sitting there thinking, wait a second. It's like every other word of the Bible. He's talking to me. So here I am. I'm fortunate enough to sing the praises of God, that I am a member of the Jewish people that has been ingathered. I've come back to this land after, and we're part of this great restoration of Israel that has been long awaited for thousands of years, ingathered from the four corners of the earth. As Deuteronomy 30 says, we have been made more prosperous and more numerous than our ancestors in the Jewish sovereignty, returning to the land of Israel. Beautiful. But wait a second. There are others in the land who want to live peacefully. But not only do they want to live peacefully, but they're suffering for their faith precisely because their choice of faith and the faith that they're suffering for makes them favorable to us and these terrorist authorities who are controlling them are persecuting them because they're friends of ours.
Wow.
So who's responsible for them if not me? So I took it upon myself to speak to the head of our organization, and we And we founded, we got together with the Kuris, and we forged an alliance, and we founded a new organization, meaning we're obviously a nonprofit organization, but we set up a separate 501c, a separate nonprofit organization, so the money would all be totally separate, and no one is employed by this nonprofit. All the proceeds go to the program. Started a program called Blessing Bethlehem. That's very simple. Blessing Bethlehem. If you spell that out as one word, go to www.blessingbethlehem.com and you could give to this. And it's a very simple project. Every week since, it took us a while to get it up and running, to get all the, everything worked out. But starting in September 2016, every week, every Wednesday night at the church in Bethlehem, between 150 and 200 families receive a food package to help them feed their families for the week. There are elderly Christians who can't make it to church. They have it delivered to their home. Younger families sometimes will get some baby formula mixed in there in their package. They're not all the same package. We've been helping families. The need, according to the Kuris, is probably upwards of about 600 families. We're not there yet. But every single week, we deliver these food packages. At Christmas time, we hosted a large Christmas dinner for the members of this church to raise them up and help them and give them strength. And this is miraculous. You know, I don't know what my great grandparents in Poland, you know, would have thought of this, of what's going on here today. But this is an alliance of Jews, an Orthodox Jewish organization in the land of Israel, looking after the needs of the Arab Christian population that is suffering for their faith at the hands of a Muslim majority. It's as simple as that. And you can sow into that.
Wow.
There are churches that have sowed into that. There are individuals who give to it monthly or weekly, or there are some churches that just do it annually. There's a few churches in Ohio that got together, and what they do is every Christmas Eve, they do an offering for it, because Christmas, Bethlehem, it's a great connection, and they do an annual offering for Blessing Bethlehem.
That's fabulous.
This is what we do. And to me, it's such a no-brainer. I mean, this is what we have to do. At the same time, it's miraculous. You think about it. Who would have thought 500 years ago? Let's go back to even 200 years ago, 100 years ago. Who would have thought that the place where Christians would be cared for, loved, and able to flourish in the Middle East would be the Jewish state? And that Jews would be working together with Christians in the Jewish state. I want to broaden this a little bit. Do we have a few more minutes?
Absolutely.
You know, the mission of Blessing Bethlehem is really, you know, what I just described. And once we were up and running for a few months, about a year ago, I'm sure most people listening will remember that there, on Good Friday, the Coptic church in Egypt was bombed by terrorists. So we've developed a relationship with the members of this church in Bethlehem. I was telling you the other day that I even went in and visited them once, and I went to their Christmas party in Bethlehem. And
that's so awesome.
And I went around table to table, meeting them, embracing them.
And let me mention, I've been to Bethlehem several times, and almost every time, in fact, maybe every time, as our bus approaches, our guide, our Jewish guide on our bus, has to disembark, because he's not allowed in.
Not allowed in, right? We're not allowed into Bethlehem. I went undercover. I went undercover. I took my American passport. I left my Israeli papers, my driver's license, and everything. I left them somewhere else. I took the kippah off my head, and I went into Bethlehem. I went to their Christmas party, and I met the people. And a lot of them knew who I was because their pastor had spoken about me. But that doesn't mean that's not the same as having a relationship. And for a lot of them, it was the first time ever meeting a rabbi, ever meeting a Jew.
My goodness.
Who wasn't a soldier at a checkpoint. And that's what real peace is, Doug.
Yeah.
Real peace isn't sitting down and you know, and twisting each other's arms to, you know, to negotiate something. And real peace is when hearts change and when people are working.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, so when the bombing happened, we contacted, through people we knew in the church in Bethlehem, we said, you know, do any of you have relatives in Egypt? Yes, some of them did. So we contacted the church in Egypt, and we said to them, hey, look, you know, we're a Jewish organization that works with some churches. We'd love to help out. What do you need? And they said, well, we really need better security equipment in our church. So Blessing Bethlehem raised some funds, and we paid for metal detectors to be installed in the Coptic Church in Cairo. So today, in the Coptic Church in Cairo, there are metal detectors paid for by a Jewish organization in Israel. Is that something?
That's something. That is just amazing.
But, you know, there's a bigger vision to this, to why this is so important to me. You know, when I was a kid, I grew up in the 1970s, 1980s. When I was a kid in the late 70s, I remember the big issue for the Jewish community was Soviet Jews. The Jews of the Soviet Union were persecuted. They were not allowed to practice their faith. They were not allowed to emigrate. And maybe some people listening remember, it was a really big issue for the Jewish community. We would have rallies and lobbying, and it was a, you know, we tried to make a big public issue out of it. And I remember as a kid going to these rallies, and we would have prayer events. I'd go with my parents. And one of the slogans that I was raised with was, if one Jew is under attack, all Jews are under attack. And maybe you've heard similar statements in other environments. And the truth is, it makes sense. Because think about it. I'm a Jew. If there's a Jew anywhere in the world who's being attacked because they're Jewish, then I'm being attacked because here's the equation. If I can say, had I been there, it would have been me, then when that person is attacked because of a point of identity they share with me, it's an attack on me too.
Right.
Right? Very simple. Well, Doug, think about this. In 2016, I haven't seen the numbers yet for 2017. I don't know if they've been published, but I haven't seen coverage of it. But in 2016, it was reported that 90,000 Christians were murdered on this planet for being Christian. I don't know if you'd heard those numbers.
Yes, sir.
It's horrible.
I have indeed been following.
90,000. It's the worst year of Christian martyrdom on record. And of course, the vast majority of that in the Middle East. Christians are being pursued. In fact, it was just in the paper yesterday that in Afrin, in Syria, the Christian population is now under attack. In all of that fighting, the mainstream media just, they never report the religion. They just report, you know, the Kurds, the Syrians, the Turks. But Christians are being attacked again this week, as we speak now. If you can look it up. 90,000 Christians were murdered for being Christian. Remember there was that event in a church in France where there was a priest who was killed by a Muslim terrorist?
Yes.
So here's a thought, Doug. I'm a Jew. You think the guy who killed that priest would have killed me too?
I think he would have.
For sure. But it goes further than that. He would have killed me for the same reason.
Same hatred.
It's the hatred of the exact same thing. I'm an infidel. I believe in the Bible. I believe in the God of Israel. I believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's why I don't believe in Islam. The shared values and shared points of faith that I have with that French priest are the reason that that French priest was killed. If I was standing next to him, I'd be killed too. And unfortunately, there's even a lot of Christians who disconnect themselves from the Christian persecution because, well, it's a different kind of Christian. There's a different denomination. They don't even realize that, you know, the ISIS guy who's murdering a Christian family doesn't care if they're Pentecostal or Eastern Orthodox or Catholic or Jewish. So if I could say, and this wasn't always the case in history, but it is the case today, if I can say that the 90,000 Christians who were murdered for being Christian, I could say with confidence that the people who murdered them would murder Jews, and they would murder Jews for the same reason. Let's go back to our equation. If I can say that if someone was attacked, and if I would have been there, it would have been me for the same reason, therefore an attack on them is an attack on me. So this wouldn't have been true hundreds of years ago, Doug, but it's true today. An attack on a Christian for being Christian today is an attack on me as a Jew.
That is profound and absolutely true.
It is a direct attack on me. It's an attack on what we share, what we believe in. We are fighting for the values of Scripture. We are fighting for the knowledge of God.
Right.
And that's what's under attack. So, yeah, the direct and local and specific thing that we're doing is feeding these families in Bethlehem, but there's a larger picture here, which is that we're on the same team. We're working together. There's a definition of good and evil and God and what all of that means that we share, and our enemies, whether they're our Muslim enemies or our atheistic neo-pagan cultural enemies, do not share. They don't share those values, and we're fighting them together. We're on the same team.
Absolutely. And I know some of our listeners may be aware that I serve as the West Virginia State Coordinator for Christians United for Israel.
And thank you for that.
And Christians United for Israel, you know, I think is just barely over 10 or 12 years old or whatever, and it's already explosively developed to a membership of over 4 million. And they've begun to really have an impact on public policy and lobbying in defense of a stronger relationship between the United States and Israel. And I'm good friends with the St. Louis Metro Coordinator for Christians United for Israel. He's a global evangelist by the name of Brian Norman.
Yeah, I met with him.
And yes.
I got to know him. I met him in Jerusalem last month.
Connected to him. So he organizes tour groups, pilgrimage, Christian pilgrimage groups to Israel. And I partner with him I try to go on one of those at least once a year. And with my huge family, my daycare-sized family of four kids, I can't take them all at once. But I made up my mind here a little while back that I wanted to take each of my children.
Yeah, you were there with your son a couple months ago.
So my oldest daughter has been, and now my second born, my son. And so I've got two more children. So I'm hoping in January of 2019 to take my daughter, Adina, who already is... Her mindset is global traveler. She's between now and then, she's going to be doing an Apostolic Youth Corps mission trip to Ghana, Africa. Oh, and my son Kyron has also been on an Apostolic Youth Corps mission trip. And so then 2020 would be when my youngest Gavin would go, which, by the way, you know, Eliana's first name is a Hebrew name. Adina's first name is a Hebrew name. But my two sons, Gavin, his middle name is Isaac, and the older of the two, Kyron, his middle
Judah.
Name is Judah.
Yeah.
And so, but among my other trips to Israel, I've been with Kufi trips to Israel. I've been with trips with Evangelist Brian Norman. I've been with APAC. It was an APAC trip when we met.
Yeah.
And so since then, we've had you to come. You come to America routinely. I heard you say the other day you spend about 10 days a month traveling in America, and part of that time you spend speaking in churches.
Yeah.
Amazing that an Orthodox rabbi is speaking in Christian churches. And so a couple of years ago when you came through, we had you speak, and what a tremendous Bible lesson you taught on what the Bible has to say about marriage. Tremendous. And then we just had you speak for our church again last night, and to our listening audience, I will tell you, if you go to YouTube and look for the YouTube channel of Christian Apostolic Church, and then it's called Rabbi Pesach Wilicki Teaching on Psalm 19. And the topic was paganism versus God's law. Knocked the ball out of the park. Tremendous.
Thank you.
But one of the things that you mentioned is, and you didn't mention this last night, but you've mentioned it privately, is that you have to be careful because you can wind up having your Jewish brothers taking pot shots at you, accusing you of being Christian. And the Christian churches that allow you to have come, they could wind up having pot shots that, oh, you're trying to forfeit Christianity and become Jewish. But it's not about that. It's about building bonds of friendship.
It's about connecting around the things we share.
Connecting around shared values.
All right, we're all out of time, but join us next week for part two of this intriguing and amazing interview with our friend, Rabbi Pesach Wilicki of Israel.
Thank you for listening. You can reach us online at cac.us.com. Catch the Voice of Truth broadcast each Sunday morning at 11:30 right here on Talk Radio 103.3 WAJR-FM.